This hour is brought to you by The Pint. Toronto's best St. Patrick's Day party is at The Pint. $5 Guinness, live music, dance floors, The Pint.
It's Mail It In Friday.
I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Yeah, it's Mail It In Friday.
I just stare at my desk, but it looks like I'm working.
So what?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Happy Friday, the day before St. Paddy's Day. And Brian Hayes, I think, is en route to Pittsburgh right now. It's a batch party weekend for him. So Scott MacArthur, Scotty Mack filling in. Noodles has got a hockey game to call somewhere. Craig Button is here for him. And O-Dog's been mailing it in all week.
He hasn't been mailing it in. He's on vacation.
Okay.
That's not mailing it in. Like, seriously. That's a bad rap you're giving Jeff.
He can handle himself.
I don't know. He was pretty flustered here last week when Kara Wagland was in here challenging him, and Tessa was going to outdrive him, going to beat him in a golf match. I think I want to set that up. I think I want to be the promoter of that.
I'll get in on that.
Yeah. You and I, we can promote?
I could be in the contest.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to... Tessa... And then is it Natasha? Is it Kara? Is it Laura Dykin that are going to go head to head with the O-Dog?
So what's the contest? The contest is off the tee, distance off the tee.
No,
the contest
I mean,
is 18
there can
holes.
Be a lot, there can be the contest, and then there can be the contest within the contest. All I know is that I haven't seen Jeff.
Is he a good? I've heard he's a good.
He's a really good golfer.
Very good.
Okay. But so is Tessa. Yeah. And so is Laura Dykett, and so is Natasha and Kara. They're all good golfers.
Kate can play a little bit too, can't she? I thought I've seen her Instagram posts. I could be wrong on
Terry Gendron. So anyway, I think there's something there. On the heels of the Billie Jean King movie.
I should get involved in this too. I can drive a golf ball 300 yards, 150 yards that way, and then 150 yards on the 90-degree slice. I've taken out neighborhoods. I'm a terrible golfer.
Really?
Terrible, awful golfer. What about you, Jonas? Because I was listening earlier this week. You're a diehard fan of the sport.
Yes. Well, so what would surprise you, I don't really like golf, but the one thing I can really do well in golf is I can drive. I don't know why.
You can hit it straight?
Yeah, and I'm pretty good at that. Everything else I'm not good at, and I don't really enjoy playing, but I can drive. I don't know why.
Wow.
Yeah, it's unusual.
Everybody at TSN, anytime you have a scramble, get Jonas in there. You need your drives
just for the drive. Everything else, I'm not good at.
That's good intel.
There you go. Draft the guy you don't think you'd take. Jonas is here for Jeff O'Neill. So I threw it out there on Twitter about a half hour ago, and I posted a photo of each of the three of us, and I linked your two accounts on Twitter. And I said, it's Friday. I mean, we're gonna steal the boys' thunder here. It's a mail-it-in Friday. Who's going to mail it in hardest? And Kevin responded with this, Craig. Button without a doubt. Okay, that's just a simple prediction. What followed is what caught my attention. Probably gonna wear a salmon-colored shirt and snack on corn nuts while his mic is muted. Now, I don't see any corn nuts, and your mic's on right now.
Don't eat corn nuts. And I don't mail it in.
Yeah,
not in my DNA.
But you wear a salmon-colored shirt.
I got it on, yeah. You know what?
Kevin knows the deal.
The man makes the clothes, not the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Kevin, he follows you. We should probably check and make sure he's not hiding out in the back or something, following you around.
Spring is in the air.
Is it? It's like minus 10 outside.
Yeah, well, it snowed about 25 centimeters again yesterday in Calgary. That was no fun.
How late does it snow? It can go in June,
so,
right?
I know it's been a tough winter in Calgary. They say it's 46 years that they haven't had a winter like this.
So, snow, cold combination?
Snow.
Really? I thought you guys
I
just get
blasted. I
hadn't
started my snow blower in 3 years. And then a couple weeks ago, a month ago, I don't even know what it was. I said, oh, a lot of snow. I'm going to start up the snow blower. Make sure there's oil in it, fresh gas. That thing didn't start. No. You don't use it, you lose it. And so it became, I haven't done anything like with throwing the banks you know, the high banks. I haven't done that in years, and I'm telling you, the banks are high.
Wow. The Chinooks don't roll in and melt today.
Well, eventually they will, but this winter's been a little bit rough.
Yeah. Okay.
Skiing's been good, though.
Yes, well, of course, with all that powder. And yep. And that distracts the Albertans from the state of their two hockey teams right now.
Nice segue.
Huh? Did you see what I did there?
I like that.
Because Craig had a really good St. Paddy's Day take that I do want to get to, but I figured at some point we should probably talk about something related to what we're supposed to be here for.
Yeah,
the show has a tendency to get off the rails when I host it. It's been pointed out to me on Twitter.
I'm kind of in the March Madness mode. I was watching my Wolverines last night. They fell behind 10-0 early. And then I'm watching. I go, they're going to win this game. Montana tried, but they just don't have enough skill, right? And Wichita State lost today. Number 4 went down.
Somewhat related. How come they never did that tournament in junior hockey? Wasn't there talk that they were going to do some sort of like March Madness style tournament? Or am I wrong?
Yeah. No,
do you remember that?
Do I remember it? I remember it very well.
So whatever
Jason
happened.
Poulter, it was the brainchild of Jason Poulter, our very own Jason Poulter here.
Huh.
And it was presented to the CHL, and it was going to, I think it was part of a television broadcast deal. And they went with Sportsnet, and...
Ah. That was the end of that?
That seems like a really... Like, it would be really interesting if there was a tournament like that for hockey.
Jason Poulter put it, he won an award. He won an award here at TSN Bell Media for the idea.
The idea that was never birthed. Great idea. Yeah. I'm trying to think, how do you feel, because you were an executive, Craig, how do you feel about those one-and-dones? Like, the idea of you work all year, and now you're into a tourney, and you've got to be better on that day. And then in this case, March Madness, you got to be better 2 days later. I mean, I love how pro sports typically play it out. I understand the NFL is different, but you get into series, you have an opportunity to build momentum or you lose momentum. One and dones. Are you more a one and done guy or are you more a series guy?
Well, I love the Olympics. I love the one. But
it just brings so much drama. Like, can you imagine if you had like two junior teams, like a bunch of draft eligible guys going like head to head one game? It'd be so much fun.
It'd be great. Well, and you can have your league championship. Everybody in the March Madness has their league championship, and then they get to the national. It's the same thing with the Memorial Cup. I think they're two separate and distinct competitions, but I love them. I think about Ray Ferraro said this a number of times during the Olympics, and he said it about Germany. He says Germany doesn't have to be the better team. They just have to be the better team for 2.5 hours. One game, right? Like, nobody's debating whether they can beat them 4 games. You just have to be the better team for 2.5 hours. And that's March Madness. And that's the madness in the whole tournament. That's what that's what I love about it.
Germany was the better team for, well, they had a lead into the final.
I was going to say for 58 minutes.
Yeah, for 58 plus.
40 seconds.
And then heartbreak. I mean, what are you going to do? St. Paddy's Day. I like your take. You feel robbed that we've got Green Day on the Saturday this year.
I like St. Patrick's Day during the week. You try to sneak out for a drink and, you know, see how you recover the next day after a late night out. There's always something. I mean, to have it on Saturday, you don't have to do anything. You wake up Sunday and you don't have to come back to work till Monday.
I got a game Saturday.
So it takes you right out.
You got Leafs and Habs tomorrow night?
Yeah. Doesn't have quite the same buzz as it has in past years.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? It's always when one of those two teams aren't good. I mean, when you get into the rink tomorrow night, it'll be good, right? You'll have 50-50 fans and all that, but I mean, it's been so rare. I was thinking about this. It's been so rare over the last number of decades that the Leafs and Habs have been good at the same time. Very rarely are the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens good teams at the same time. I think last year they were, but they weren't destined to meet in the playoffs the way things laid out.
You ever read The Game by Ken Dryden?
I have not.
He touches on the rivalry back in the late 70s. And it's always interesting to hear the players talk about rivalries and big competitions. And Ken talks about it in the book about how he felt cheated after Ballard blew up the Leafs. That there was a really good team. It was Toronto. It was Montreal. There was an opportunity for this rivalry to grow. And as a competitor, he felt cheated that, you know, it got blown up. You know, I asked Bob Clark one time. I said, he was retired, and I asked him about playing. He goes, I'd like to play one more game at the height of my career that meant something. And you know, that's what they don't care about a game in November. They don't care about a game in February. They want to play a meaningful game with high stakes. And I mean, they're great competitors. That's what I love about it.
Yeah. Did you ever meet Ballard?
I met Ballard lots. My mother worked for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Huh. Can you imagine, like, what would he have been like today if with social media and... Like, would he just been would he be Trump of the NHL?
I think he would be. That's it must have been right across my forehead. Like, exactly, Jonas. That's exactly what I would think he would be. He didn't, I mean, he spoke his mind and did whatever he wanted and didn't feel that there was no filter on Harry Ballard.
I think the Twitter account with a blue check mark would be at Pal Hal. At Pal Hal, and he would just, whatever is on his mind.
Oh.
Like, can you imagine after a game, like, let's say they got crushed 5-1, just come on there and just start carving the coach?
Just start mashing Daryl Sittler, like, just...
He might fire the coach during the game. Like,
Them on Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, Sittler, I mean, that's what he would do. I mean, he might take a poll. Should we fire the coach?
Make the announcement
during the game.
Make the announcement in the second intermission. You're down 7-2. Punch Imlach has been fired and replaced by...
No, but first you have to do the tweet where you kind of preview it. Punch Imlach better get his group together. This is unacceptable.
I would like to apologize to the paying consumers for tonight's performance.
Hashtag sad.
Yes. Pal Hal with the hashtags.
Yeah. Yeah. And polls. Should I fire the coach at the end of the game?
Like, yes.
Second period.
Yeah.
It was when he was in charge when they stripped the C off of. Yes?
Well, no. Well, Daryl cut it off.
Right. And then they stripped it.
That was after they traded Lanny McDonald.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Because they were really good buddies. I was talking to my dad.
But they were a good team, and that's why I bring back that part about Ken Dryden talking about that. Like, and you feel, like, you know, it's interesting. You think about different games. You ever get excited for a game? You go, sure. This is going to be a good game. We all do, right? And then it lets you down. You feel cheated, don't you? Like, drama. We wanted something more than what we got. I felt that way about Russia-Canada in 2010 in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, especially given, do you remember the Russia-USA game?
Yep.
Actually, that was 2014.
14, yeah.
But yeah, but the 2010 was a disaster. I
mean, well, you know.
For Russia.
Well, it really was, but this was this moment in time where you're going, okay, it's Russia-Canada, and I mean, it was over early, and there was no forgiveness by Team Canada.
I was really disappointed in Russia's performance in Sochi in 2014, because I would have loved to have seen...
Yeah, exactly what Craig's talking about.
You know, like, I just would have loved to have seen Russia on home soil, knowing what it means to its president. He had set everything up for this moment. And I think that would have been, you and I, Jonas, didn't live through it. We're not old enough. But that would have been the closest replication on a one-game basis to the 72 Summit Series.
Well, I was in the Montreal Forum when... The Soviets beat Team Canada 8-1 in 1981. And that was, like, that was one of those moments you're like, oh.
Yeah, it's like you get excited for a big game and it's terrible.
And it was just complete domination by the Soviets.
Like, for me, I don't know about you, Scotty, but the moment I remember best internationally is watching the 98 Olympics. Like, getting up in the middle of the night. Like, those games were amazing. And so were some of the ones in 2010 and 2014, but I don't know why. Maybe when you're that age, like, it sticks with you?
Well, the other thing, when you're that age, it sticks with you. Also with 98, it was the first time the NHLers were involved, yeah. Right? Because Lillehammer 94 the Forsberg
The NHL goal. Shut down in 98. That was the first year they did.
Right.
But I agree with Joe. Like, I mean, we were getting up early. It was Nagano. And it wasn't just, and for me, I don't know how you felt about it. It wasn't just the men's. It was the women's, too, because that was the first time women's hockey had entered the Olympics. So, you know, my girls were at an age where they wanted to watch it, and they were getting up early, too.
I was driving, if my memory serves correctly, I was driving to a job interview in 2002, and I was listening on the radio to the women's gold medal game. And I'm driving alone in my car to Owen Sound for a job interview. and I am listening to this game, and our girls are getting penalized left, right, and center. And I just, I remember just screaming in the car. I was talking to the radio. It was insane.
I'm surprised that, like, you know, I was driving alone in my car to Owen Sound. I'm surprised that Stomp and Tom Connors didn't have lyrics in one in a song like that. Like, you know, like it sounds that is so Canadian. Like, and I was mad that they were getting penalty after penalty. Like,
yeah, when I probably should have been looking out for the snow squalls in Flesherton and Wyerton and wherever the hell else I was spinning through on my way there. No, but those one-off games are, you know, when everything is on the line and we have. Like those memories stand out.
The Olympics, the women's gold medal match at the Olympics here in Pyeongchang, phenomenal game. It was a phenomenal game. You know, the back and forth was great. There was, right before the U.S. tied it up 2-2, Rooney, the U.S. goalie, made an unbelievable save. If Canada goes up 3-1, it's lights out. And right off, they got caught in the line change, and it was 2-2. And, you know, Shannon Chabadas was unbelievable in the Canadian net. And, you know, it got to a shootout, which a lot of these games have happened between the U.S. and Canada in the women's hockey. But I'll tell you what, I mean, you're on the edge. I was on the edge of my... I wasn't the only one. It was really compelling drama and competition. And, you know, to see when the U.S. ultimately won it, just the joy and then the disappointment on the other side. I mean, that to me is what it's all about.
How long do you think it is, Craig, before some of these other countries on the women's side really become truly competitive?
They are truly competitive.
They're getting there now.
There's no question they are.
I've always compared this to the Sun Belt expansion of the NHL in, you know, through Nashville. And it takes about a generation to you know, develop kids. They play hockey because there's a team in town. The Dallas Stars, I know, are one of those teams that have done tremendous grassroots work in the community. The kids play hockey. There's interest in the sport where maybe there hadn't been the generation prior, and it takes some time. We're getting to that point now in the women's game.
We are, and all you got to do is just look at the summaries. I mean, the scores are closer. It's not 45-5 shots on goal. There's back and forth. Cheryl Pounder, who does commentary work and analysis work for TSN, did it at the Olympics for women's hockey. And one of the things that she said during the tournament was that one of the big things for women's hockey is the conditioning. Like, you know, staying in the game for long enough to be able to compete at that level. And she said, that's a big thing. And, like, you know, I'd never thought about it, but, like, how they learn conditioning in the different countries and how they understand it and work at it. She said, that's become a big part of it. She said, like, the Russian girls, they can do it for about half a game. She said, the Finns are there now. She said, you know, the Swiss, you know, there's some really good players that are. So when you look at the summaries, the games are a lot closer and a lot tighter, and I think that speaks to the evolution of the game and that the countries are getting much better.
Yeah, I think 25 years from now, we'll look back at the Canadian and American women of this generation and the previous and see them as the real trailblazers, and maybe we'll have international women's tournaments.
Quick story. We went to Russia House, Chris Cuthbert, Ray Ferraro, and I, and with Alexei Yashin. And Alexei was...
Just throw that part in.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, I didn't want people... How did they go to the Russia House? But anyway, Alexei had been the manager of the women's team in Sochi. Huh. So they were in there, and it was really interesting as you walked in, like how revered he was by them and the respect he had. They came over, he was spending time, so then they wanted to get a picture. Anyway, there was a girl, and she started to, Ray Ferraro and I were talking, Ekaterina Smolina. It was her third Olympics, anyway. So we got talking to her, and English was really good, so she was telling us about her English and everything. And Ray asked her, he said, are you going to play in the 2022 Olympics? She goes, I'll be 33, it'll be my fourth Olympics, I hope so. And he said, well, my wife was a two-time Olympian for the U.S. in 98 and 2002. Right away, she says, oh, she's an Olympic champion. She knew right away that the 98 the U.S. women's team had won. And right away, didn't miss a beat. She goes, she's an Olympic champion. Didn't know who it was. So I turned to her and I said, do you know who Tammy Granato is? She goes, Tammy Granato. And she just lit up and everything. I said, that's his wife. And then she started, I mean, she wanted to know everything about Cammy. So she would have been 9 years old in 1998. and the impact of Cami Granato and women's hockey on somebody in Russia that we would never know about was pretty profound. And it was really, really those unexpected moments, those times when you just don't, you can't predict anything like that. It was really, really phenomenal to see that happen.
Yeah, and we live in a day and age now where it truly is global. You have access really to all of these players, and you can track them, and you can look them up on the internet, and the world's changed.
So hopefully that happens more and more. So hopefully, you know, the Marie-Philippe Poulin, you know, she's inspiring young girls to play hockey and around the world. And I think that that's a big part of it, because I'm seeing real progression in the women's game, and I think that that's really important.
Craig, for the second time in about a week and a half, you and I are doing Overdrive at the same time, the day after the Leafs played in Buffalo. And I was a little apoplectic last time, because the KeyBank Center is the devil's pit for the Maple Leafs.
Is that what it's called now?
Oh, yeah. Well, you in the U.S., Philadelphia
called everything.
Philadelphia was like, core states became First Union, became Wachovia, became Wells Fargo, because all these banks just keep swallowing one another up. So I think KeyBank bought up HSBC or whatever it was. Not that we want to go too far down that rabbit hole, because, God, banks buying banks are entertaining on sports talk radio and arena naming rights.
It's going to be Scotiabank Center where the Leafs are going to play.
Yes.
Because they got the naming rights going forward.
Right, and for a pretty penny. But they go down there last night, and JVR scores two more goals. Mitch Marner continues to be at the top of his game. Curtis McIlhenny is writing a hell of a story for himself, the way that he's played as the Leafs' backup goaltender this year. Maybe a bit of concern about Leo Komarov. Dregs tweeted about an hour ago that Leo's going to have an MRI today after that collision with Nylander, and they're wondering about the knee. So if any news breaks on that, we'll bring it to you. But to go down to Buffalo and get a W, I know it sounds crazy, especially with how bad the Sabres are and generally have been in recent years. It's not something that happens very often for the Leafs.
Well, and they're without Frederik Andersen. They're without Austin Matthews. They're without Nikita Zaitsev. Like, those are three really big components, obviously. And I always thought this throughout the Matthews injuries. We forget how important one guy can be in hockey. And it just makes such a difference when, like, you have to bump everyone down the lineup. And now, instead of, you know, Nylander playing with Matthews, suddenly Nylander has to play center. And suddenly he's not quite as effective as he normally is. Like, I just think we sometimes underestimate that. And the fact that they've been able to kind of make do without him, and now we'll get him back at some point a little bit more rested before the playoffs, I think is important.
Yeah, you know, I've just picked up on your, and I think it's a really good thought you just had there. You know, it's a team sport, but you can never underestimate the importance of one player. And it's such a...
Especially a player like that.
Yeah, an impact player. But, you know, when you put it in those terms, you kind of go, yeah, that really makes... Like, it really does, because it's the trickle-down effect that they have, right? And that's really important to the team.
Right. Because suddenly Kadri and Marner are now facing top lines. Yeah. And then suddenly the group, you know, the Bozak group is facing second pairs. Like, suddenly it just has the effect on a lineup that it makes everything tougher for everyone else. And, like, then again, you're also taking out a guy who has 29 goals.
What I liked about the game last night for the Leafs, to me, they never let the Sabres into the game. They just kept them at arm's length.
That's what a good team does.
That's exactly what they do. And as try as the Sabres did, they couldn't get a foothold into the Leafs' space. And I thought that was a sign. That's how you want to be playing at this time of the year. That's what I like to see. And they look good.
And just to pick up on Jonas's thought, this is a different line of thinking as compared to the Austin Matthews example, but there has been some debate, been some concern, I guess, over the acquisition of Thomas Plekanec and his performance over the first 5 or 6 games that he's been a Leaf. And I keep saying to people who want to bring this up, so this is an acquisition for the playoffs. So let's play the hypothetical game here. If the Leafs lose Austin Matthews, that they're in serious, serious trouble. So shelve Austin from this conversation. But if a Kadri, God forbid, or perhaps better examples, if a Bozak were to get hurt, well, if you don't go and get Thomas Plekanec, you've got Austin, you've got Kadri, then you've probably got Dom Moore as your third line center.
No, you probably have to move.
Or are you moving Nylander into the middle?
Or Marler over.
Or, yeah, you're doing you're just something. Not as good. But you're doing something you'd rather not do.
Right.
You know, in the scenario I was going to throw out there, if Dominic Moore's playing more minutes, maybe a Freddie the Goat or somebody like that is coming up, your depth is challenged. So if you happen to lose somebody like a Bozak to injury in the middle of a playoff series, you've got a guy who can step up and play more minutes, and you've got another guy in Dom Moore who, if he's not in the lineup to begin with, can then shuttle in and play up the middle on the fourth line. I mean, it's just about, to me, it's about depth. I don't think there should be any sort of verdict at this point on the Plekanec trade.
Way too early. But one thing that is crazy when you look back, what would have happened to the Leafs if Kadri hadn't turned it around? Like, if that turning point where he's suspended, where they come out and say, like, this has to change, like, what if he doesn't figure it out? Like, his evolution into what he's become, which is a guy who can match up against top lines, a guy who can score, a guy who's helpful on your power play, is huge.
Yeah, but Jonas,
you think of all these breaks that the Leafs have had, and that's one that they created, and he created. But, like, lots of things have to go your way to kind of become what they've become.
He jumped in my, just quickly, I know we got to go here. He jumped in my mind, though, about how Harold Ballard. And one of the things I wanted to ask Ray in the 5 o'clock hour follows exactly what you're talking about just there. So I don't know what's happening.
We're simpatico here.
It's the salmon shirt and whatever.
Navy?
Is that one? Yeah, Navy. The Navy sweater and the salmon shirt. We like it. Adam Kaplan is an NFL insider for SiriusXM Radio. It has been an unbelievable week in the NFL. We'll get into some of the signings as free agency has gone down, and we'll get into this Baker Mayfield story where an unnamed team apparently put a PI on him and followed him around for a little while. Has that crossed a line? Because I got to be honest with you, I have heard of this happening in other sports before. So it didn't entirely surprise me, but how prevalent is this actually? Adam's our guest on Overdrive. Scott MacArthur, Craig Button, Jonas Siegel, TSN 1050. You're streaming on the TSN Go app. Scott MacArthur, Craig Button, Jonas Siegel, Overdrive for your Friday, the day before St. Patrick's Day. Adam Kaplan of SiriusXM, NFL insider on the other side on the Baker Mayfield story. Apparently one of the NFL teams stuck a PI on him, wanted to track his movements. We'll get into that. How common is that in football, if it is at all? How common is that around professional sports? This is not the first example I've heard of this. I think it's the first that's come out publicly. I do know that this happens sometimes, but is it right? Is it reasonable? Is it fair? We'll get into all of that, and then Craig, Jonas, and I will debate it as Overdrive continues on your Friday. TSN 1050, the TSN Go app. So there are a handful of quarterbacks who could go high in next month's NFL draft. The two kids, Rosen and Darnold, who played at UCLA and USC down there in Southern California. Baker Mayfield is another name, and he could be, I mean, maybe this is something Adam Kaplan could fill in for us, but he could be the most pro-ready quarterback, and he could go in the first round. And Sports Illustrated is out with a report, came out yesterday, claiming that an undisclosed NFL team stuck a private investigator on Mayfield for a period of time. Is this acceptable behavior? Does this cross the line? How frequent is this? I have to sit here and say that I'm not entirely surprised by it. I do believe pro sports teams in all sports do this when they feel it's necessary. Adam Kaplan is with us now from SiriusXM. Adam, were you surprised by this SI report?
Guys, good to talk to you today. Now, this happens. I mean, teams will do. They'll dig. They'll go back to high school. They'll have people show up to places where they know the player hangs out. This is not uncommon. I mean, especially for Mayfield, who should be a first round pick. I met Baker last weekend at the Maxwell Club Awards in Atlantic City. And he's a kid who people just want to get to know a little better. He doesn't really have any off-the-field issues. He's just a different kid, brings a lot of attitude to the game, and people want to learn a lot more about him.
Yeah. I do you know, of course, you know, you're not going to divulge any examples, but do you know of specific examples that you've been told about where other teams have done this with other draft-eligible players?
You might remember many years ago when Jamarcus Russell was drafted, the Raiders had some concerns, so supposedly Al Davis, the late owner, then had a private investigator go in the background of Jamarcus Russell. This goes on in other sports. This is not the first time I've heard about this.
Yeah, well, maybe Al Davis should have hired a different PI the way it worked out with Jamarcus Russell there.
So, Adam, is there, I guess now the conversation turns to, is it unscrupulous? Is it something that shouldn't be done? I mean, is there people in the league or agents that think that this shouldn't be done?
Well, it's not done a lot. It's done typically when a team or teams have major concerns about a player, especially a first-round quarterback. That's kind of where this starts. You have to dig. In fact, that's why teams will go back to high school, sometimes to grade school. They'll talk to friends, family members. They typically don't leave a stone unturned when it comes to any player who's a quarterback in the first round where they're concerned. And I think that's – with Mayfield, there really aren't. It's just that he's just a different kid. He definitely brings an attitude, and you kind of want to get to know who the player is. It seems the story's a little bit over the top, but it's typical this time of year.
Yeah, well, I mean, I totally understand why a team would do it, why a general manager or president of football ops would. If you're drafting a quarterback in the first round, you're hoping he'll be a franchise guy. And if you hit on that, you could have a long and successful career with that organization. If that pick goes wrong, then you're circling back, if you even keep your job in the first place. So I think it's totally appropriate, and hopefully the kid has nothing to hide. Who's impressed you most? Which team has impressed you most with its work in free agency over the last week?
Yeah, so that's really what I'm working on. I'm not really on in the draft now. I've done my study of the quarterbacks, but nothing else matters to me right now other than free agency. And when you really look at it, because free agency is first, and you have the draft in late April. I like the job that the Vikings have done. They get Kirk Cousins. They get an upgraded quarterback. They just signed Sheldon Richardson, the veteran defensive tackle, who's one of probably five or six best defensive tackles in the league. They wanted a one-gap penetrator. They'll get that in Sheldon Richardson. The only issue now for the Vikings going forward is their offensive line. They probably need to add two or three. They're going to probably lose two of them. So I think that's the position that they got to help Kirk Cousins with. But other than that, I think they've done a very good job. I think the world champion Eagles, the Super Bowl champion Eagles, have done a really good job. They cut Vinny Curry, one of their starting defensive ends, within the last hour. They tried to trade him. They tried to restructure his contract. He wouldn't do it to take a pay cut. So he's out. He'll have no problem finding a team. Defensive end is awful in free agency, so I think he'll be able to find a team. So I like what the Eagles have done. I like what the Jaguars have done. They added several players. This is a team that made the championship game. They fortified their offensive line with Andrew Norwell. I like the job they did. But typically, guys, I think when you look at free agency, you supplement your roster through it. You can't build through it. You build through the draft and you supplement through free agency. That is what the Eagles did last year, and that was a big reason why they won the Super Bowl.
I have a question about Case Keenum, and off of that, I'll spin back toward the Vikings and Kirk Cousins. Adam, what do you believe about Case Keenum and his ability to replicate in 2018 what he accomplished last season?
You know what? It's interesting. So from talking to the Vikings, that was their big concern, whether he could do it again. Now, he started nearly a full season, and he played the best he's had in his career by far. He was terrific. I mean, no question about it. He played like a top-10 quarterback, without question. But I don't got the feeling that they thought the money that he would want, they would be able to pay, because he had never done this before. Whereas Kirk Cousins has been a solid quarterback for years. But I would argue, I don't think he'd ever played to Case Keenum's level from this past season. But they're banking on it with the coaching change in offensive coordinator with John DeFilippo. who did a great job as Eagles quarterbacks coach, probably the best quarterback coach in the league. They're backing on those two together, along with quarterbacks coach Kevin Stefanski, getting Cousins to play at the next to the next level, which would be top 10 level, which he has not played at yet. But they're paying him to be at $28 million a year.
Right. So from a value perspective, and to me it's just about wins and losses. I mean, if the Minnesota Vikings take that next step and they, by rights, could have been in the, you know, I mean, they had a huge victory over the Saints in an exciting way. By rights, they could have gone out in that game, though, the way things played out. If he can get them to the Super Bowl, money doesn't matter. It's all about wins at crucial time of the year. But from a value perspective, you're not concerned that, that Cousins is being overpaid by the Vikes. I know everybody thought he was going to be.
Here's what I'll just tell you. So I reported last weekend that, from talking to people that I trust, Kirk Cousins was going to sign with the Vikings the following week. The deal would average a minimum of $27 million. It wound up, when they finished it, being $28 million. When you look at Case Keenum's deal, his two-year deal averages $18 million. And when you compare the two deals, you'd say, boy, the Broncos are paying $10 million less per season, and the Broncos could also get out of it after 1 year, and they don't have to worry about more than $7 million. Only $7 million is guaranteed, fully guaranteed in a second deal, a second year. So it's a better value for the Broncos. And by the way, the Broncos wanted Kirk Cousins. Don't let them fool you. They said today, Case Keenum was our guy, our number one choice. That's not true, but they're going to make you think it was. But Case Keenum is a guy that did it last season. Now he goes to a new team, two really good receivers, and we'll see how they do going forward.
So now we talk about, you know, the offseason, free agency, everything, Adam. And there seems to be some excitement around what the Cleveland Browns are doing. Is that legitimate?
Yeah, you know, I said this on Twitter the other day that it's good to see a real front office in there. They had a bunch of amateurs running it before, it was just totally disjointed. They're actually spending money in free agency, not trying to lose anymore. They're actually trying to win, and they still have a great amount of cap space and draft picks. So yeah, I think with Tyrod Taylor, who's a 1 year stopgap, I could see them winning six more games than they did last year. Of course, they didn't win any games, so I think they're going to be much improved. And I like that John Dorsey, the GM, brings a real film viewer to the building, whereas Sashi Brown, who oversaw personnel, was an attorney who didn't really know football.
Yeah, and Paul D. Podesta was a baseball guy, more or less, a stats guy, but a baseball guy.
Analytics, yes.
Analytics is background. Thanks so much for this, Adam. We really appreciate your time this afternoon.
Guys, thank you.
Adam Kaplan, SiriusXM NFL Insider.
Yeah, that's good. I listen to Adam, and, you know, he's one of those guys that maybe people, you know, it's the Schefters and everything, but he's got some real good, firm thoughts on what's happening and seems to really be wired in.
Well, you know, and with the Browns, we love to poke fun at them, boys, but Tyrod Taylor's probably the bridge quarterback. They go in and get an inside slot receiver in Jarvis Landry in a trade with Miami. They signed Carlos Hyde, the ex-Ohio State running back, played for the 49ers, so they've got a little more stability in the backfield. Those might be bridge guys to what is coming, but they also have the first and fourth overall picks in next month's draft. So I don't know if they're going to be relevant, depending on what you feel relevant is defined as, but they are headed. There's finally a feel there that they're headed in the right direction.
Well, I think that's what Adam said, right? Like, I think that, you know, you're trying to move in the right direction. There's a confidence in the front office, right? And that's where it all starts, you know? You know, we sit here and we talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Jonas and I were talking during the last break just about, you know, you consider where the Leafs are at. They're a good team that hasn't had blunders in terms of their management. And that's a real key here. And again, teasing what I want to ask Ray about in the 5 o'clock hour. But, you know, you consider everything they've done. It's been real solid from their free agent signs. And even free agent signs like Zaitsev. Like, you know, identifying that this is a player and then recruiting them. And, you know, Borgstrom came in and, you know, Callie Rosen, you know, like, you know, they've done a real good job in all the areas, I think.
Rail will kick it off with us just after the top of the 5 o'clock hour, as he always does. We'll get to our Leafs lineup contest. It's Scotty Mack for Brian Hayes, Craig Button, Jonas Siegel here as well for Noodles and the O-Dog. It's Overdrive for your St. Paddy's Day weekend Friday. TSN 1050, the TSN Go app. Craig Button's Lipscomb Whatchamacallits are about to lose to North Carolina in March Madness. Stunning upset. The Tar Heels, the 2 seed, are going to advance over 15 Lipscomb. It's a tough word to pronounce. Time for the Leafs lineup contest. You can listen to Overdrive every weekday for the Upper Deck Leafs lineup player of the day. And on Friday, which would be today, you call in with the names of all 5 players to win 2 lower bowl tickets to see the Leafs and Sabres on April 2nd down at the ACC. And this week's theme is former Leafs who played in the 1999 Toronto-Buffalo Eastern Conference Final. Today's Leafs lineup player is Sylvain Côté. The Upper Deck Leafs lineup is brought to you by Upper Deck Team Triples, available at ZephyrEpic.com. And the phone lines are open at 416-870-1050, 416-870-1050. Tyler Hunt will pick up the line. Give him the names of all 5 players that you've heard this week. Ray Ferraro and Jared Greenberg in the 5 o'clock hour. The Leafs over the Sabres in Buffalo last night. The Habs are in town tomorrow night. Doesn't sound like Carey Price will be playing for the Habs, though I believe he is with them, if I'm not mistaken. Still out with that concussion, although he's skating. The Raptors continue to roll. 10 straight wins. They get it done in Indiana. Down after the first half, they storm back with strong third and fourth quarters, so we'll get into that. 10 wins in a row, driving toward the playoffs, looking more and more like they're absolutely a lock to be the first seed. Exciting times in this city. We're all over it as hour number 2 of Overdrive with Scotty Mack, Craig Button, and Jonas Siegel starts now on TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app.